Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Madhouse Podcast. As always, I am your host, Mad Max. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about, it's our part two in our 40 years of WrestleMania. And we're going to pick up right where we left off last week. The first episode was WrestleManias 1 through 10. This episode is going to be 11 through 20. And we're going to get it started with WrestleMania 11. Took place in 1995. The main event that night was Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow. And then, of course, you had the WWE Championship match between Diesel and Shawn Michaels. This is probably the most mixed reviewed WrestleMania for a long time. I think until WrestleMania 2000. This was like a so-so WrestleMania. I mean, it was held in the Harvard Civic Center in Harvard, Connecticut, and wasn't really a big crowd. I mean, that building is only maybe like less than 20,000. I want to say between 16 and 18,000 people. So it wasn't like a big venue. You know, it's not a WrestleMania didn't really start getting bigger until maybe the 2000s, I think. But it was a mixed bag because they had a non-wrestler and in the main event. And it was the first time that it happened. Now, people within the company, people within the business thought that was kind of a slap in the face to the business itself. But for the mainstream that it was, it brought a lot of unknown qualities to the event. It was more mainstream than it was, you know, years prior and everything like that. A lot of people praised the fact that LT went in there and had a pretty good match. But a lot of people also disowned the WrestleMania because of the fact that they went on last. You know, a lot of people thought the title, because it's not the world title match, you know, it should have gone on before and things like that. But I mean, who knows at this point? I always thought that this wasn't a bad WrestleMania, but yeah, the main event should have been Shawn Michaels and Diesel because it is the world title. Other matches on the card were Jeff Jarrett and Razor Ramon for the Intercontinental title. We saw the return of Yokozuna, who had been off TV for a while. I want to say since WrestleMania 10. And him and Owen Hart became the WWE Tag Team Champions after they beat the Smoking Guns. Undertaker took on King Kong Bundy, and this was Undertaker's ascension to the top because he had kind of taken over that role of Hulk Hogan and being the guy who beat all the guys who were big guys. You know what I mean? Like at WrestleMania 9, he beat Giant Gonzalez. WrestleMania 11, he beat King Kong Bundy. And then, you know, WrestleMania 12, he would beat Kevin Nash or Diesel. You know, he would beat the guys who were considered the giants, the guys that were over 6'8", and things like that. So, you know, it was interesting to see that. That was kind of like the beginning of it, so to speak. And you kind of had a so-so WrestleMania at that point. The following year, WrestleMania 12 was at the Anaheim Pond in California. And this WrestleMania was kind of the coming out party for a lot of guys. This was the culmination of this rivalry that had kind of been brewing between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. It was the debut of Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was the debut of Triple H. And, you know, you had a pretty iconic, memorable match in the main event between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. It was a 60-minute Iron Man match in which Shawn Michaels, who came really close at the end of last year to becoming the WWE champion, but maturing a little bit in front of the camera, so to speak, and winning the Royal Rumble once again after his concussion, because this was during the angle where it was a live show. That it was a Monday Night Raw, and he was in a match with Owen Hart, and he takes an enziguri to the head and he collapses in the match, and that's how Raw went off the air. He gets a bad concussion, and then he returns at the Royal Rumble only to win it. And they build a story up of him having a childhood dream to one day becoming the WWE champion. And they built this kind of like Rocky training montage between him and Bret going into the main event that year. it was interesting to see that. You know, it was kind of cool to see that. It was the WWE started taking time to building their story along the way and things like that. You saw the return of the Ultimate Warrior, who had been fired. I think he had got fired after the events of WrestleMania 6, and then he got fired again, and then, you know, this was the last time, and he kind of just basically fucking squashed Triple H. You know, this was Triple H's coming out party, so to speak. It was his first WrestleMania. Like 8 seconds into the match, Triple H gives him the pedigree, in which Warrior no-sells it, gets back up, and, you know, beats Triple H in the most ununique way. Like, I have nothing against the Ultimate Warrior. I think he was one of the best guys that they had in the 80s and things like that. But he had, I think I mentioned it in last week's episode, that he has by far one of the worst finishing moves of all time. Like, yeah, it's cool seeing the test of strength and everything like that, but, you know, the gorilla press and then the splash, I was like, okay, it just looks so anticlimactic. You know, another memorable match that a lot of people don't talk about is the Hollywood street fight between Roddy Piper and Goldust. And I know Goldust is, Dustin, you know, that's his real name, has talked about the match in his, in interviews and things like that. Like, he wanted it to go as smoothly as possible, but because of Roddy's, you know, careless attitude and everything like that, there's moments where it got too real, where, you know, they're fighting in the back lot, you know, he runs him over with the Cadillac, and then they do the chase afterwards, and then they kind of replay the O.J. Simpson chase with the Ford Bronco and everything like that, and then it comes back to the pond where it kind of, you know, goes down and everything like that, and it kind of has this very anticlimactic match, but it's so entertaining when it's a street fight in the parking lot, you know what I mean? Like, it's a real intense match. Then it kind of gets a little bit like, what are they doing? Like, the whole recreating the O.J. Simpson run and everything like that. I was like, why the hell did they do that? And then it gets back in the ring. It gets back to the Anaheim pond, and then they go back in the ring, and that's when it starts to get a little crazy. There's no real winner. They call the match off, and they declare Roddy Piper the winner and things like that. Like, it started off very intense, and then it got silly, and then it got ridiculous at the end. So that was interesting to see that and everything like that. So I was like, wow, this was kind of really all over the place. Another match they had was Undertaker versus Diesel, which I think one of only two times that Taker had fought somebody that was bigger than him. Because Taker's like 6'10", and Kevin Nash is like 7'1". So, you know, that was something there. And they had a pretty intense match. Like, two big guys could really kind of go in the ring and things like that. And I think Nash had said that their build for their match is, it would have been better had Bret Hart cooperated a little bit more in their build up towards it and everything like that. And then Nash also had made some comments that, because I think Taker was going through a divorce at the time, you know, we really, you know, Taker wasn't really feeling it that night, even though they had a damn good match. Taker was kind of, felt like, a lot of people felt that Taker was off his game in that match, even though it was still good at what it was and things like that. But, you know, who knows what happens behind the scenes and everything like that, as long as the show went on, to say the least, and things like that. So that was kind of cool. And then, like I said, it was the debut match of Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin took on Savio Vega. I think it was for the $1 million title. That was during his feud with Savio, and that was Steve's run as the ringmaster, but he was kind of more floating into something else. He wasn't the ringmaster anymore, but he was still being managed by Ted DiBiase at that time. And this was during the feud between Austin and Savio, which, if you go back and watch, that was a really good feud. And it culminated later that year, because DiBiase would have a match to where if Steve won, he would garner himself, not only get back the TV, the $1 million title, or he would get some type of prize for it. But if Savio won, DiBiase would leave the company altogether. And then, you know, DiBiase did leave the company, because it was about a month later he was on WCW at that time. So, you know, this was a match that was the beginning of a, this was the beginning of what we now know as one of the greatest, if not the greatest superstar of all time, in Stone Cold Steve Austin. So fast forward to WrestleMania 13, 1997. It's in Rosemont, it's at the Rosemont Horizon in Illinois, Rosemont, Illinois, which is, I want to say, a suburb of Chicago. But WrestleMania 13 was kind of the first WrestleMania that was in going into the direction that would now know that we now know as the Attitude Era and things like that. And the main event of that night was The Undertaker versus Psycho Sid for the WWE title. I know that behind the scenes there was a lot of things going on with Shawn Michaels and Bret. Now this is 97. Now this is where, this is the beginning of what we now know is the Attitude Era, but there's a lot of controversies around this and things like that, because we're getting to the point where, you know, the lines are going to become blurred between what is real and what is not within the world of WWE. And I think WrestleMania 13 is the beginning of that blur, because I think 3 months later, Shawn Michaels goes down with an injury. You know, he wins the championship at the Royal Rumble that year because he beats Psycho Sid in San Antonio in his front of his hometown to become the WWE champion again. But before he's able to give the rematch, because the from my understanding, the original main event for WrestleMania 13 was supposed to be the rematch from last year's Bret and Shawn. And then this was going to be where Bret is going to go over and win the match and things like that. But all of a sudden, for some reason or another, Shawn goes down with a knee injury like 8 weeks before WrestleMania. And, you know, with a knee injury, you're out like 3-4 months. And he didn't come back until after WrestleMania. So they vacated the championship. And then I think at the, I can't remember what event it was. It was the, I don't know if WWE were doing events on a monthly basis, but it was at the pay-per-view in February of 1997, in which it was a fatal four-way match between Undertaker, Psycho Sid, Bret Hart, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. The winner of the match would become the champion, and I think Sid Vicious won the match by beating Bret Hart. So he then would go on to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But we also got one of the most iconic matches of the night. And even though it wasn't the main event, it was the match that, in my opinion, stole the show, which was the submission match between Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, this was Stone Cold's coming out party, because this was the first. Now, at the time, from the time he broke away from Ted DiBiase to this point in time, he was the bad guy. Steve Austin was the bad guy. And he was going into this feud with Bret Hart. And this feud, man, this was a really good feud, because you had this, he wasn't afraid of him. Bret wasn't afraid of him. Steve wasn't going to back down and things like that. And I think because of this whole issue with Shawn, Bret needed to maintain some momentum, so he needed a new opponent. And lo and behold, he's got this guy, this new up and coming guy by the name of Steve Austin. Their feud began at the Survivor Series, you know, 6 months before WrestleMania, and it carried on, and I think it spilled over to WrestleMania too. But man, that match, you'll never forget that visual of Steve Austin in the sharpshooter bleeding. You know, that was a pro wrestling match. That was a fucking match right there. You could go back and watch that match and just, like, if you're an old school wrestling fan, I know guys like Jim Cornette and Jim Ross and those guys who were there that night, you know, they say that was the best match of the night and things like that, because it really told a great story. You had this guy in Steve Austin who was not going to back down from, you know, the excellence of execution in Bret Hart, and Bret Hart beat him to a bloody pulp. And the fact that he puts him in the sharpshooter and Steve Austin does not tap out, he passes out from the pain. You know, he passes out. And then the special guest referee that night was Ken Shamrock. And Ken Shamrock had done, you know, he was the UFC fighter, the MMA fighter. He was the legit, you know, fighter and everything like that. Because back then, UFC was still, in a lot of ways, in its infancy. You know, it hadn't it didn't explode yet. You know, they still had a lot of guys in there like Horace Grace and Dan Severn, who were the early pioneers of what UFC would eventually become. And Shamrock was one of those guys, and they made him the special referee that night. And then I think later that year he would make his WWE debut, you know, in the ring, even though he had already been wrestling for a while at that time. But that match itself between Austin and Brett was really, really good. It told a great story. Other matches from that night included, those were the only two matches that really stand out, because the only other match that I remember from that night are, it was Triple H and Goldust for the Intercontinental title. At this point, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall they left the company. You know, Shawn Michaels was out with an injury. There was a Chicago street fight between the Nation of Domination, which was D'Lo Brown, Farouk, and the Godfather, who was, who I can't remember what his name was. It wasn't a Godfather yet, you know, because he didn't become the Godfather till the end of 97. But they took on the Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors. It was Hawk and Animal, and they were teaming up with Ahmed Johnson in a six-man tag team match. It was a street fight. And it was pretty interesting to see that kind of match at that time. Like I said, WrestleMania 13 didn't really have a whole lot of build behind it, but it's the execution of one match in particular that would lead us into the Attitude Era. And that bled over until all the way until WrestleMania 14. 14 was in 1998, and that was the catalyst for what would become the Attitude Era, because at the Survivor Series in 97 is the infamous Montreal Screwjob, in which Bret Hart is screwed out of the WWE Championship by Vince McMahon because of the backstage politics. So going into WrestleMania 14, the main event was build up between Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin, but a lot of people remember because that was when they brought in Mike Tyson, and that brought a whole lot of outsiders to WrestleMania. They had a lot more coverage from Fox Sports, ESPN, and all that. You know, they were getting worldwide recognition just because of Tyson being involved. You know, Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble that year suffered his back injury against The Undertaker. But, you know, like I said, if you go back and look at that match between Shawn and The Undertaker, he hits the coffin, but you don't look at it like a bad angle. Like, he didn't land wrong. He didn't hit it incorrectly or anything like that. He barely scrapes the end of it, and then he falls to the floor. You don't even know that he's hurt until, like, the next day when they announce it. So for him to go into that match, and then think about it like this, Steve Austin is coming off his neck injury, you know, because at SummerSlam the year before, he's had the Intercontinental Championship match with Owen Hart, and Owen Hart drops him on his head, and that bruises his spinal cord, and he stops wrestling for, like, 6 months. Like, he's still on TV, and they built that character really, really well. So he finally comes back at the Royal Rumble. So from August to January, which is, what, 5 months? You know, Steve Austin is, you know, not really wrestling that much. So then he returns, wins the Royal Rumble, and then this entire story between Austin and Shawn Michaels, the story starts at the Royal Rumble, because Shawn Michaels ends his rivalry with The Undertaker at the Royal Rumble because of the addition of Kane. But now that he's the champion, he has to face the winner of the Royal Rumble, which turns out to be Steve Austin. And they're going to this WrestleMania. And, like, that match wasn't a bad match between Austin and Michaels, but, like, when you hear Steve and Shawn talk about it, they feel it could have been a whole lot better had both of them been 100%. Like, had Steve had his surgery to where, you know, he could wrestle, you know, 100% without worrying about his neck, and had Shawn not gotten hurt when he did at the Royal Rumble, you know, not having to worry about his bad back, you know, they could have tore their house down, you know, because Shawn is Mr. WrestleMania, you know, and Stone Cold Steve Austin is, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, and everything like that. But that match wasn't bad. You know, yeah, there's some pretty awkward spots, you know, for both of those guys and things like that. But, you know, they still professional. They still had a good match. They still, you know, tore the house down, and they still had a coming out party for Steve Austin. and things like that. And it was a good match. It was a good story because in order to move into the Attitude Era, Steve had to be the one carrying the torch. He had to be the champion because other than that, it would have been a it would have just been the same thing that we had been seeing since last year with Sean running the show and everything like that. But once Sean went down with his injury, that was it. You know, Sean was going to take, I think Sean took about 4 years off at that point, and he wasn't going to come back to WrestleMania until 2003, and we'll get to that when we get there. But, you know, that was it for Sean. Another match that night was Undertaker and Kane, and that was the culmination of their rivalry because at the King of the Ring, no, it wasn't King of the Ring, it was Bad Blood the year before. Kane makes his debut, and we have this incredible story between The Undertaker and Kane, which culminates with their first match against one another at WrestleMania 14, and that was a good match. You know, for two guys who are like 6'10 and everything like that, they can really go. And like I said, Undertaker would continue his run of, you know, beating guys who were above 6'8", and Kane, you know, was maybe about an inch taller than he was, and, you know, it made for a good storytelling. And that would create the rivalry that would last until the summer of 98, which it'd take another turn when we get there. But that was a damn good match in and of itself. So, WrestleMania 14 was the good segue for the Attitude Era. So that was really good. WrestleMania 15 was not only a coming out party for another competitor, but it was we were still on the rocket ship going into the stratosphere in the Attitude Era, because WrestleMania 15, that was in Philadelphia, and the main event that night was Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock. The Rock was the one who was going to have the coming out party, because a lot of people would like to say the biggest stars of the Attitude Era were Steve Austin and The Rock, and 1998 was the year that they both was their coming out year, because Steve Austin from January to about SummerSlam was the man. You know, he was the WWE champion, he won the Royal Rumble and things like that. But from October to the end of that year, going into January of 99, that's when The Rock started to come out. The Rock was a babyface, and then, you know, at Survivor Series, they turned on Mick Foley and, you know, made him to be the babyface, and The Rock became the bad guy. So going into WrestleMania 15, Rock was the bad guy, and, you know, Steve Austin needed a bad guy to work with to go into WrestleMania, and The Rock was made, and this was a damn good match. You know, Austin and Rock, their rivalry had already been established in 97, you know, with the Intercontinental Championship, but now here we are in 99, and it's for the WWE Championship, and this was the one match that would see the main event of WrestleMania 3 years, and this is part one. And this is the corporate story, you know what I mean? This was just the corporate Rock going up against the blue-collared beer. How does The Rock say it? The beer-swelling, finger-gesturing, biggest piece of Texas trailer park trash walking God's green earth. And it was a damn good match because it was the culmination of this rivalry that Steve Austin had with the boss, Vince McMahon. The only person that he has left to stand in his way is The Rock, the WWE champion. And that was a damn good match. It went back and forth. They went through like four different referees, and it was really cool, really cool. Another memorable match from that night was The Undertaker versus the Big Boss Man inside Hell in the Cell, which was weird because it ended with them trying to hang the Boss Man, and that didn't look pleasant at all. That was more shocking, but it was just an underwhelming moment. You know, you had, and then you had Butterbean in there. Butterbean went one-on-one with Bart Gunn, and it looked silly because, you know, they did the Brawl for All thing the year before, and Bart Gunn wasn't the guy to win, who was supposed to win it, but he ended up did winning it because, you know, this was supposed to be like a shoot angle, and they were really supposed to knock each other out, and Bart Gunn ended up being the last man standing when he really wasn't supposed to be. And, you know, he ended up fighting Butterbean at WrestleMania, and they went one round. He knocks him down in the first round, then he knocks him out and when he gets back up. And it's like, this is just pitiful. You know, I don't understand why they didn't just kill the whole thing. It was a bad idea all the way around. And then the iconic group known as D-Generation X kind of breaks up at this point. Because Triple H turns on X-Pac, and that was like the ascension of Triple H. He was... I mean, I don't remember him having a match on that card. I think he fought Kane. And then when we get to WrestleMania 16 or WrestleMania 2000, he's in the main event, you know. So that was like a turning point in Triple H's career. Well, fast forward to 2000, and WrestleMania was once again held at the Anaheim Pond. And this was a coming out party for a lot of guys. You know, because the main event at WrestleMania was a fatal four-way match between Triple H, who was the WWE champion, and he had really emerged from 99 to 2000 as the company's top heel. And it really worked because he was going up against The Rock, Mick Foley, and The Big Show. This, in my opinion, I think because it was WrestleMania 2000, they try to have everybody on the card. Because there wasn't, if you go back and watch WrestleMania 2000, there's not a single match that is one-on-one. Everything is either fatal four-ways, triple threats, tag teams. There was a battle royal at that point, you know, and things like that. And, you know, it was, they were just trying to, you know, jam everybody into the match and things like that. But a lot of people think that because it was oversaturated like that, it kind of took away from the main event, which a lot of people thought should have been Triple H versus The Rock. And in my opinion, it should have been. But they added Mick Foley, who was supposed to retire that year. And then they added The Big Show, who was kind of the new guy on the block because he had only been with the WWE for about 18 months at that point. And here he is, already a former two-time WWE champion, and now he's in the main event. So there's that. But there were two matches, in my opinion, that were really kind of standout-ish to me. One was the iconic triangle ladder match between the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian. You're never going to be able to get a match that tops that, you know, because that was the beginning of that rivalry. And things like that. And, you know, it was for the tag team titles. And those six guys really went out there and made a name for themselves. You know, they weren't the main event, but they were going to be the one to kind of tear the house down. Another match featured three future world champions. Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, and Chris Benoit. It was a triple threat match for both the Intercontinental and the European title. And that was a great match in and of itself. You had three professionals who worked like that. And, you know, you guys can say what you want about Chris Benoit. The guy's in-ring stuff is top tier. But because of how his career and his life ended, it's forever tainted. So, you know, that doesn't really go anywhere. There was that infamous 13-man hardcore match for the hardcore title, in which had a wonky finish, and Hardcore Holly ended up winning the hardcore title, which was really weird. But yeah, man, WrestleMania 2000 just felt different. And then fast forward to WrestleMania 17 or WrestleMania X7, which 2001, April 1st, it was held at the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas. Me personally, I would have loved to have been there, but I unfortunately didn't make it that night. I had to watch it on TV. But this was arguably, to this day, a lot of people think it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time. The main event was part two of Austin and Rock. And this, out of all three of their main event matches, this is probably the best one. You had two good guys face off against each other. And we had not seen that since Hogan and Warrior, you know, what was it, 10 years earlier. You had Taker versus Triple H, which was also great. And then you had the iconic TLC 2 match, the Dudleys, the Hardys, Edge and Christian once again for the tag team titles. You had Shane McMahon versus Vince McMahon in a street fight. That was pretty cool. You had this real cool hardcore match between Kane, Big Show, and Raven, which was really cool. You know, everything about WrestleMania 17 just really stands out to a lot of people because you had a lot of guys come in there and just, it was either their first or their last. You know, I think this was the last time we saw certain guys like, I think Jericho and William Regal had a match. Test and Eddie Guerrero had a match. Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit had a match. You know, it was all kinds of crazy and all kinds of interesting to see that. You know, China versus Ivory for the women's championship was there. You know, China had her neck injury and she would hold the title for about 6 months before being released from the company. And that was really unfortunate with her because that was the last time we saw her in the WWE ring. and things like that. And, you know, WrestleMania 17 was really, really intense. WrestleMania 18 would be the first time since WrestleMania 6 that it was going to be held at the Toronto Sky Dome in 2002. And then, obviously, the big match going into that was the Icon versus Icon, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan. And even though that match wasn't the main event, it stole the fucking show. Because if you go back and watch that, that was the first time you had a deafening reaction between those two guys. You know, you had Hulk Hogan hulking up for, you know, which WWE fans hadn't seen that in almost 10 years. And then he's going up against the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. And WrestleMania 18 was special because it signified the end of the Monday Night War. Well, WrestleMania 2001 did that because it was the end of the Monday Night War and things like that. And it was the beginning of the guys coming from WCW coming to the WWE, because you had guys like Booker T made his debut, WrestleMania debut that night. RVD made his WrestleMania debut that night. You know, just a lot of stuff going on. You know, that was the first time we'd seen Ric Flair at WrestleMania since, I think, what, WrestleMania 8? You know, 10 years. Same thing with Ric Flair. You know, they didn't play that up. But Ric Flair had a damn good match against The Undertaker that night. So that was pretty cool to see. Diamond Dallas Page makes his debut. Well, he didn't make his debut, but he makes his in-ring debut at WrestleMania. He wins the European title from Christian, which was kind of cool. Things like that. You had a fatal four-way tag team match for the tag team titles. It was the Dudleys, the Hardys, the APA, and Billy and Chuck. Pretty good match. And then you had a triple threat women's championship match. Ivory, Lita, Trish Stratus. Really good stuff. Kane and Kurt Angle, which was a weird pairing, but, you know, they had a good match. So, but the main event that night was Chris Jericho defending the Undisputed title against Triple H. This was a moment Triple H will never forget, because he, the year before, he had that quad injury and he was out for like 8 months, and he came back right after Vengeance and, you know, right ready for the Royal Rumble that year, wins the Rumble. And then at Vengeance that year, Chris Jericho would become the first man to beat Steve Austin and The Rock on the same night to become the Undisputed Champion. And that was kind of cool. So even though Chris and Triple H were the main event, and I've heard interviews that Jericho and Triple H had argued with the people backstage saying they didn't want to follow Rock and Hogan, because they knew that should have been the main event and that they weren't going to get a reaction the way they did. And you could tell, like, if you go back and watch that, the reactions that Hogan and Rock got, you never saw that ever again that night. As good as Triple H and Chris Jericho were, they didn't get the same reaction that Hogan and Rock got. There's no way. You were never going to be able to top that, to say the least. And it was really good. It was a really good night for a lot of those guys. WrestleMania 19, 2003 was a little bit of a sour note because we had a lot of guys come and go that night. It was Stone Cold's last night, his last match for a while, which was kind of sad, which they didn't really announce until many years later, but he had his final match at WrestleMania against The Rock. And this, even though this match wasn't a championship match, it was the match that went on right before the main event. And it was one of the main events because it was Triple H and Booker T for the world title, and then Rock Austin 3. And then the main event that night, the last match on the card, was Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. There's a lot of great matches on this card. A lot of underrated matches, like Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels. You know, Shawn Michaels returns to WrestleMania after, what, 5 years? And still proves that he's, you know, Mr. WrestleMania. He's still the main event, the headliner, the heartbreak kid, the showstopper, you know, and he's going up against Chris Jericho, and that was really good. Undertaker opened the night with the first match, and he had a handicap match. He was going up against the Big Show and A-Train, once again taking on two big guys who are bigger than him, and that was really cool to see that. Rey Mysterio and guys like Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero made their WrestleMania debuts that night. You know, Rey Mysterio always wore, like, iconic gear for WrestleMania. And I think going into 2003, his gear was more of the Daredevil. even though it wasn't red, it was more of like a maroon color. And he was going up against Matt Hardy for the Cruiserweight title. Eddie Guerrero was in a triple threat match for the WWE Tag Team Championships. And then you had this crazy street fight between Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. These two old guys were just like, what the hell? And then Roddy Piper shows up and all hell broke loose. And WrestleMania 19 was okay, but it was kind of a little bit of a downer because it was Steve Austin's last match. It was going to be The Rock's last, because a lot of people knew that The Rock was kind of coming and going, you know, because his Hollywood career had kind of started at that point. And, you know, it was just a matter of time. You know, then we had Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar, which was a scary match because Kurt breaks his neck in the match, and then Brock Lesnar does that shooting star press where he lands on his head and, you know, gets a severe concussion. You know, at the end of that match, it was scary of a night. You know, it was damn good. It was a good match, but until the injuries happened and things like that, you don't ever want to get hurt or get somebody else hurt and things like that. I think Triple H and Booker T's match was good. I just think the build up for it, I think it should have been Booker T's night to kind of silence all the critics, because they built him up to be this underdog, but for some reason they kept. I always looked at the year 2003 that Triple H was going to, Vince McMahon was going to use Triple H to bury the remaining WCW guys, because he went through Scott Steiner, then he went through Booker T, then he went through Kevin Nash, then he went through Goldberg, and all in 1 year. You know, he beat them for the world title all in the same year. From the end of 2002 to the beginning of 2004, basically the entire year of 2003, he was main eventing pay-per-views against former WCW guys and winning. And I don't know if that was calculated, but it was kind of, you know, odd. And of course, last but certainly not least, WrestleMania 20, 2004, that year it was held at the Madison Square Garden, and this was a pretty good WrestleMania, but it's a little eerie when you look back on it. Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit would walk away as the world champions for Raw and SmackDown, and unfortunately they would not be around much longer. I think Eddie would die. Eddie passed away in 2006 or 2005, and then Chris Benoit passed away in 2006, and it was really unfortunate. And I know WWE, you know, they don't really like talking about WrestleMania 20 that much because of the main event. You know, like, if you look at a lot of the showcase, if you play the video games and you play the showcase mode where they go through WrestleMania 20, they don't ever talk about that match. They revolve around John Cena's match, or they revolve around the Goldberg-Lesnar match. And they do all kinds of stuff like that. But they never go through Benoit's match or even Eddie Guerrero's match, despite the fact that Eddie and Kurt Angle are still here. Eddie and Kurt's match, the build-up for it was the fact that Eddie had just become the champion. And they didn't like, and Kurt was attacking his past, you know, his drug addict and criminal and things like that. And, you know, Eddie had come a long way, and now he's the champion. But Eddie was a good champion. Eddie's stories, his rise to the top was really good. To whereas Benoit's story was a little bit different. It's the same story. Now, I mentioned it earlier about the whole Triple H kind of running through WCW stars, and like, had he won that match, that would have been another notch, because he knocked off Chris Benoit too, and I would have been like, damn, you know, like, what the fuck. And when, now I think about it, it started at WrestleMania 18 because he beat Chris Jericho, so it's like, what the hell, you know. So but you know, so going into the main event of that match of WrestleMania 20, Benoit just won the Royal Rumble in 2004, and he was challenging the World Heavyweight Champion, which was Triple H, but Shawn Michaels had made it known that he wasn't done with Triple H, so then it becomes a triple threat match, in which Benoit wins. Pretty good match, you know, it's a great moment. It's almost like the Austin and Bret Hart moment, where he, you know, the guy's in the submission hold covered in blood, and then, but Triple H taps out in this one. Triple H definitely taps out in this one. And it's a good moment. It's a feel-good moment for Chris Benoit, to say the least, and things like that. And it's also, it's not necessarily a feel-good moment for Eddie Guerrero, because his thing, Eddie was already the champion and things like that. Like, Eddie's feel-good moment is when he won the title the month before, when he beat Brock Lesnar. And, but, you know, for him to beat Kurt Angle, and then for Kurt Angle's injury to happen right after, there's not really a real good feel, there's not necessarily a feel-good moment there. The match is great. You know, Kurt and Eddie are, you know, two of the best in-ring of all time. There's no denying that, and they really had a good match going into. But the emotional standpoint, like the storytelling of it, wasn't there the way it was for Chris Benoit. Other matches they had on the card, it was The Rock and Sock Connection reuniting once again to take on Evolution, which was Batista, Ric Flair, and Randy Orton, which was a good look for both of those guys, for both of those teams, I should say, because it was proof that The Rock still had it, you know, having been away for a while, because this was The Rock's last WrestleMania match for about 8 years, and he wouldn't come back for at least another 7. Mick Foley's feud with Randy Orton would continue after that, and then, you know, Randy Orton and Batista would continue their upstart after that, so to speak. And then, of course, Ric Flair is still a legend, so, you know, his career is already forever intact as a Hall of Famer at that point. Another match was John Cena versus The Big Show. This was John Cena's debut at WrestleMania, and he's the new guy on the block. Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg was the big kind of stinker of the match, and it was not a bad match. It was just the fact that the internet and a lot of the stuff, the word had got out that Brock Lesnar and Goldberg were leaving the WWE after that. You know, the word had got out, and you could tell because the audience would hijack the match, and, you know, even though Steve Austin was the special guest referee, and they put on, you know, a match that they could put on, and, you know, something that a casual fan would be okay with, but because of all the marks in Madison Square Garden, you know, you sold out, you know, and all that other stuff, the chance, it was just embarrassing, you know, to say the least. There was a cool match between Chris Jericho and Christian involving Trish Stratus. That was a pretty cool, that was an underrated match. And then Rey Mysterio was supposed to win the Cruiserweight title in that Cruiserweight Invitational. I remember that because he wore the Flash outfit, and I thought that was kind of cool. So, yeah. There was a women's championship match between Molly Holly and Victoria. And the only reason, from what I heard, the only reason that match got on the show was because they added the stipulation that if Molly Holly didn't win, she would shave her head. And then, of course, she did. She didn't win, and they did shave her head, which was, I mean, that's committing to it, man. She's an underrated wrestler, Molly Holly and Victoria. And the fact that those girls are not in the Hall of Fame yet, well, Molly Holly is now, but Victoria's not. So, you know, they had a pretty good match. They kind of held the women's division down in the mid-2000s. Like, it was after the Attitude Era, but prior to the Women's Revolution and things like that. Those were some of the names that kind of held it down, along with Michelle McCool and Mickie James and all them. So, yeah, that was kind of cool. What else was there? WrestleMania 20. Wasn't really a whole lot. I know there were two fatal four-way tag team matches because, of course, it was Raw and SmackDown. Raw had their world tag team champions, who at that time I think it was Booker T and RVD. And then Scotty Too Hotty and Rikishi were the tag team champions on SmackDown. So that was kind of cool to see that. And, you know, to see that some of those guys still had it going on for them. And I think that was it. There wasn't really a whole lot going on at WrestleMania 20. Like I said, the main events are forever going to be tainted as a great moment for Eddie Guerrero and for Chris Benoit. But because of the way those guys' careers and lives ended, one is going to be remembered and revered. The other one is going to be, almost erased and tainted. So it's unfortunate, but it's true. and things like that. So, yeah, we're going to stop here. And then the next week's episode, we're going to pick it up with WrestleMania 21, and we'll go all the way to 30. And then, of course, WrestleMania weekend is the week after that. And we're going to go from WrestleMania 31 to about, I think I want to say WrestleMania 35, because I covered 39 and 38 on this podcast already, so we don't got to worry about that. I'll just cut it to I'll cut to the WrestleManias that I've not covered on this show as we get ready for WrestleMania, 40 years of WrestleMania, so to speak, which is really, really something special. But that's going to go ahead and do it for today's episode. If you like the episode, be sure to follow the podcast on all podcast outlets, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google Play, Odyssey, Reddit, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure to follow the podcast on all social media outlets, Instagram and Twitter, TheMadHouse21. Let me know what you guys thought about WrestleManias 11 through 20. What was your favorite one? What's your favorite moment? What is your favorite WrestleMania of all time? Whatever the case may be, let me know. Instagram and X, TheMadHouse21. Be on the lookout for more episodes as they come out. I think tomorrow's episode is going to be the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. That was pretty good. Got some stuff to say about that. As well as a bunch of stuff coming out this week. And as far as anything else is concerned, we got stuff dropping on the streaming services. We got stuff coming out on the weekend and things like that. So be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. And of course, as always, be sure to embrace your inner madness.